Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday. Thanks, everybody, for calling last hour. It was a great hour, and this is going to be a marvelous hour. I've been wanting to speak to our next guest for ever since I found out that she was going to be delivering the inaugural poem at Barack Obama's inauguration. Elizabeth Alexander is going to be joining us momentarily to talk about praise song for the day and to talk about the importance of words and how she performed in front of that huge, huge crowd on Inauguration Day. I would have been so nervous, but she said she remembered advice from an actress to breathe, to breathe, to breathe, and so she did. We are in a pledge drive right now. It's our very important winter pledge drive. And so we do want to ask for your support for Wisconsin Public Radio. Listener donations, of course, the foundation of our budget. And so that's why we're asking for your gift right now. Make your pledge of support at WPR.org, or you can call 888-202-2552. Rhonda Fanning is with me now in our studio. And Rhonda, hello. What's our goal? How are you?
Well, I am good, go ahead. Kathleen. Thanks for asking. And our goal this hour is $5,000. In meeting that goal, and I would just like to start off by thanking everyone who called in last hour. We did make our goal, so thank you to everyone who called in. 29 new members called in last hour.
Wonderful.
So welcome. Your contribution this hour of $60, $120, any amount you choose is going to help us reach the $5,000 goal we have this hour. So please make your pledge now online at WPR.org or call toll-free at 888-202-2552.
And in just a moment, we'll be speaking with Elizabeth Alexander about her inaugural poem, along with poetry in general, the importance of the spoken word, her being asked by her friend to speak at the inaugural. That must have been quite a special thing. Did he call on the phone? Did he say, "Hi, Barack here. Will you do the inaugural poem?" You know, I mean, how did it happen?
And how long did it take her to answer? Probably not long.
Yeah, she said, "Okay," right away. The preparation for the poem and why she – I love the poem. I just think it was Frost-like and Sandberg-like in many ways. So we'll talk about her choosing of the words. And give you a chance to speak with her as well. And we also have a special deal going on
this
hour.
Kathleen.
Can you explain it, Rhonda?
I can't. I would love to. Thank you. This hour, everyone who pledges, either online at WPR.org or by phone at 888-202-2552, will be entered in a drawing for an autographed copy of Elizabeth Alexander's poem that she read during the inauguration. Grey Wolf Press has published the poem, Praise Song for a Day. And so you could be the lucky winner of a copy of that signed by Elizabeth Alexander, the inaugural poet. And Kathleen, you don't even have to pledge this hour to participate. You merely could send in a postcard with your name, address, and telephone number to Alexander Drawing, Wisconsin Public Radio. And that address is 821 University Ave., Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. People can find that address, if they didn't get it just now, on our website at WPR.org. So pledge any amount or send in a postcard and be entered in that drawing to win an autographed copy of Elizabeth Alexander's poem.
All
postcards right. have to be received, though, by March 11th to be entered in the drawing.
Do you want to, why don't you give that address once again?
Would you like
again?
Me to?
Will you
okay.
please?
All right.
All right.
It's Alexander Drawing, Wisconsin Public Radio, 821 University Ave., Madison, Wisconsin, and the zip code is 53706.
You know, my mom used to enter these drawings all the time, and she always won. I'm not entering it, don't worry, but I don't have the same luck my mom did. She entered back when I was a little kid, why I like to shop at A&P in 50 words or less. And she won all these pots and pans. And by golly, they're still good and I still use them. Then she went on a cruise with Richard Simmons listening to Wally Phillips on WGN. 3-week cruise in the Bahama area with Dad. By just filling out a postcard.
Really? I think
the only thing I've ever won is
telemarketers calling me endlessly. During dinner trying to sell me things. But I don't really think that I'd consider that winning.
No.
Again,
no.
that
right.
number yeah. to pledge is 888-202-2552. Or you can log on to WPR.org.
All right. Thanks so much, Rhonda.
Thank you.
Yeah, that'd be a fun thing to enter. And what a treat to be able to receive a signed copy of her poem, because it was such a, well, I'm stating the obvious, it was such a historic inauguration. We're very happy to have Elizabeth Alexander with us now on the Ideas Network. She was the inaugural inaugural poet for President Barack Obama. She earned her BA from Yale, and she is teaching at Yale right now. She teaches African American Studies, and she'll be head of that department come July of this year, I believe. She's written five books of poems, including Antebellum Dream Book, American Sublime, Miss Crandall's School for Young Ladies, and Little Misses of Color. She has taught at the University of Chicago, where she met the president. She has won all kinds of awards for excellence in teaching and also for excellence with the written word. She was the first recipient of the Alphonse Fletcher Senior Fellowship for work that contributes to improving race relations in American society and furthers the broad social goals of the U.S. Supreme Court's Brown versus the Board of Education decision of 1954. At Yale, she teaches courses on African-American poetry, drama, and 20th century literature, as well as the survey introduction to African-American studies. And what was fun also was to see her on Stephen Colbert. I don't know if you saw her, but she even appeared on Stephen Colbert, which I saw online somehow yesterday. It's a very funny piece if you'd like to watch it. Elizabeth Alexander, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, our pleasure. I loved your poem. I like to read poetry out loud, and it's nice to read it, but it's nice to say it again and again and listen to the words. Did you, when you were putting it together, say it out loud frequently or read it and then say it out loud?
Well, that's a very important part of my process in writing poetry. I tend to work on paper until I can't do anymore, and then when I read it out loud to myself or ask someone to read it to me, I ask my husband to read it out loud to me, I find that I can catch things and see things and fix things that the ear notices that sometimes you don't notice when you're in your head.
Mm-hmm. What I loved about it, Elizabeth, is that it took me, I felt like I was on a train trip all over the country. The images that you brought to mind, I saw all of them. I saw people encountering each other, and I saw all of these people working all over the country. It had that broad, this is America, but also the personal at the same time that it was broadly, this is America. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. I think that certainly in the meditation that led up to writing the poem and in that part of the process, I was trying to kind of get my head around this remarkable, huge, diverse, clamorous, contradictory, beautiful country full of so many people, full of so many different landscapes, full of so many different ways of thinking about Americanness. And so while that is not necessarily explicitly in the poem, that certainly was the kind of Walt Whitman spirit in which I approached writing it, because this really is a very, very remarkable place. And I love the way that Walt Whitman encourages us to, when he says, "Do I contradict myself? Very well, then, I contradict myself. I am large. I contain multitudes." Mm-hmm. And so he's talking there about the self, but also about the country 150 years ago, of course. Mm-hmm. And so that was an animating spirit for me.
Yeah. Were there others?
Other poets? Sure. Yeah. Yes. The poet Gwendolyn Brooks has always been quite important to me, and particularly for this occasion. She, of course, was the great bard of the South Side of Chicago, the neighborhood that the Obamas come from most recently. And so I felt that not only her sense of place and sense that, you know, she said, all I have to do is go to my window and stick my head out and listen, and there's a poem out there. And she lived in just a few square blocks over most of her life once she moved to Chicago, but she found everything she needed there. And so I think that sense of the infinite variety within communities, within circumscribed communities, and within people and families and neighborhoods, is very, very important in her work, and, of course, her sense of language is so exact. Her poetry is just charged and precise, and I found that very, very, very inspiring and a wonderful example. There were other poets, too. I always return to Yeats for his sense of the historical and just for the beauty of his language. The poet Robert Hayden is someone else who gave me a wonderful sense of historical moments told in intimate terms.
Nice. And that's what your poem does in many ways. Historical moment in an intimate term. I like that description of it because that seems to be what it is. And you are very precise, I think, and I'm wondering how long you think about each word. It seems to me as though you do, that you think very carefully about, each word that you used in this inaugural poem. Did you labor over the words, or did they just sort of flow? Did they just come to you?
Labor.
Okay.
Major,
yeah.
Serious okay. Labor. And I think that, you know, that's the job of poetry, I think. In my experience as a poet for many, many years and in talking to poet friends, you know, every now and again we get hit with a bolt of lightning and a poem is kind of delivered more or less whole. But mostly we labor. And the trick, the art, is to labor in a way that the work nonetheless has a feeling of spontaneity, that it flows, that it achieves the status of music, which is to say that it has movement, that it's not just staccato, but it's work that gets us there. This poem in particular, you know, it was obviously, I mean, this is an understatement, but it was a very important occasion.
Oh, I know. And, it was so big.
So big. So, I really worked as hard as I've ever worked on anything.
Oh. How did it happen? Did he just call you on the phone and say, Elizabeth, we're buddies from the University of Chicago. I like your work. Will you do a poem for me? How did it happen?
I don't know what the whole process was, but I got a phone call from the inaugural committee, in fact, telling me that I had been chosen. And, you know, one thing that we know about our president is that he is a reader, that he is someone who reads widely. Whenever he's asked about what he reads, the lists are wonderfully full and eclectic. He's a person of letters. He's a thinker. And, of course, also, he is a very amazing writer himself, which we see in especially that first book, Dreams for My Father, which I think is a very, very, very accomplished memoir that achieves the status of literature. It's not just a story. Mm-hmm. It's a beautifully written story. Mm-hmm. So, I assume it came from him, and the call came from that committee, and I set to work.
And did they give you guidelines, Elizabeth, or not?
They did not, which I think is a very heartening thing for artists. They said, compose a poem and deliver the poem. And that was it. And so I think that what that approach shows is that if you ask artists to offer what they have, to do what they do, that you trust them to do what they do. And I think that's actually a very courageous thing, to say that you trust artists to properly serve the moment according to their own sense of artistic propriety.
Mm-hmm. You taught together at the University of Chicago. Did you know each other pretty well then?
Well, yes. I mean, we were both on the faculty at the time. He was in the law school. I was in the English department. So those are quite different divisions. So teaching together wouldn't quite describe it. But it's a very interesting, intense university where you know what folks are doing. And the Hyde Park neighborhood is a wonderful neighborhood, too. And, you just sort of know who's interesting and who seems to care about some of the same things.
Right, yeah. I would thought it was great. You're such a good sport for going on Stephen Colbert, too. I saw that clip yesterday, the day after the inauguration.
That was fun.
Was it fun?
It actually was really, really fun. I was a bit nervous about that because, of course, he's very clever. And there's, no one wants to seem as though they aren't getting the joke, but it was lots of fun. And what I felt very pleased about at the end of the day is that, in fact, I was able to talk about poetry. Some of my students said, "You sound just like you do when you talk to us," in talking about, this is a praise song, and this is an occasional poem, and this is a metaphor. So that was a kind of a serendipitous fun thing.
Yeah. What is the difference between a metaphor and a lie, he asked you.
Which is actually a great question.
Yeah. It is a great question. Let's go back to the enormity of this occasion. There, as everybody knows, there was just so much there. There was, you know, say it plain, as you say in your poem, that many died for this day. Sing the names of the dead who brought us here, who laid the train tracks and raised the bridges and picked the cotton and the lettuce, built brick by brick, the glittering edifices that would keep them clean and work inside of it. All of that was there on January 20th. The crowd, as you know better, maybe we know it from watching it on television, was so huge, Elizabeth. It was such a huge day. Just tell me, describe the day for me. I would imagine that you were thinking about that. You had to notice it when you saw the people who were listening to you, but that you thought about that a lot prior to the day and then certainly on the day itself. Many people just couldn't stop crying.
Well, it was a very, very emotional day, and I was awakened very early, maybe 4:30 in the morning, by what sounded like marching. And it was people walking to the mall. I mean, it was hordes of people walking to the mall, and loud enough to wake me up. I mean, so that blew my mind. And then to see, I think we turned on the television at about maybe 5:30, and at that point, you know, people were, the mall looked almost full to me. I mean, it wasn't, but to see how many, and it was very, very uncharacteristically cold. But no one was daunted, and no one, you know, no arrests out of all of those people. The stories that I've heard on the ground, if you will, from friends and acquaintances who were there are just absolutely extraordinary about the spirit, the cooperation, that sense of, you know, we don't always know that we're in the midst of history when we're in the midst of history, if you know what I mean.
Right.
And people knew. I think everybody, people at home, people there on the stage, people knew they were in the midst of a historical moment and a moment that signaled change, but also, I think, more soberly, a moment that signaled the need for us to think about how we're going to participate and do more and be a part of that change. That seems to me to be the outgrowth of the extraordinary collective message of all of the campaign rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when, you know, yes, of course, Obama is an extraordinary leader, a charismatic figure, a remarkable visionary and speaker. But what he consistently said was, this is not about me. You know, this is about us.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are some very important pronoun choices. And I think that at least what I'm hearing, there's a sense that people are trying to figure out how they can contribute and continue to contribute and continue to do better, and that people understand that even though we need great leaders, that it's not one man's job.
Right. You must have been so struck, unless it was, there were so many people, it was a blur to you, but to look at that mass of humanity gathered on that mall, the diversity of the human faces, the joy, the tears, all of that. It was just, it was a knockout experience for me to watch. I think I watched 10 hours of television that day. I couldn't get away from it. But I'm wondering what it was like just to see all of that. You're a poet. You're seeing all of that. You must think about that every day.
Well, and in fact, actually, it's funny, because I haven't seen and didn't see any of the TV stuff, I didn't see a lot of the individual faces, because what I could see from up there, it was astonishing in another way. You can't make out faces from up there. But what you see is, you know, literally waves of humanity gathered for common cause. More people than you've ever imagined in your whole life, but again, gathered for common cause. And so that was very, very extraordinary, and I did take a moment to collect myself and to just to really, really, really remember it.
Good. Elizabeth Alexander, our guest, wrote and delivered Praise Song for the Day, the inaugural poem that she recited and labored over and presented to the country, to the world, actually, on January 20th at President Barack Obama's inauguration. We're going to welcome phone calls for Elizabeth. If you'd like to join the conversation, that would be wonderful. Our on-air number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, for you to join this conversation. And we also want to tell you that we are in our Winter Pledge Drive, and we have a very special thing going on here. Well, WPR.org is the online pledge drive. 888-202-2552 is the number for you to call if you would like to pledge. And we're very happy to sort of have this drawing. It should be fun. You could be the lucky winner of Praise Song for the Day, Elizabeth Alexander's poem, which she will autograph for you. What a thing that will be to have forever, right? You don't have to pledge to participate, but all you have to do is send a postcard. It would be nice, of course, if you pledged, with your name, address, and telephone number to Alexander Drawing, Wisconsin Public Radio, the address 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, and the zip is 53706. Postcards received by March 11 will be entered in the drawing as well. If you'd like to speak with her and talk about the inauguration and her poem, we'd love to have you with us. 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Elizabeth Alexander is our guest this hour. She wrote the inaugural poem for Barack Obama's inauguration. Could we talk a little bit about the national conversation that has taken place as a result of this poem? I think it's just wonderful. The poetry has been elevated again. It hasn't happened all that often during inaugurations for there to be a poet to recite. Is there more talk about poetry? Has it been elevated, do you think, in the national discourse as a result of your being there, Elizabeth?
Well, I think it's been a wonderful moment for poetry, because I really do think that far more important than me being the one who's chosen to write this poem, I think that what's significant is that there was poetry at this inaugural. I felt that I was up there on behalf of American poetry, which is tremendously robust, diverse, alive and kicking, but sometimes not in the spotlight in the way that I think not only it deserves, but that in a way surfaces what's going on the ground. You know, people read poetry. People meet poetry. People need poetry. We poets know that, because we go around and we share our work and we, you know, communicate with our readers, and we know of the vitality of the art form. But what's been really lovely, and what I can only really call a blessing about this particular opportunity, is that I've received hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of emails and letters.
Good.
From people, most of whom are not in university classrooms or in poetry bookshops, talking about how they interacted with the poem, talking about what poetry means to them, sending me their own poetry, people from literally from all walks of life, people from around the world. Within a day or two after the poem was written, I got emails from Vietnam, from Poland, from Zagreb, from people saying, here, I've translated your poem. People who understand what poetry can be in the midst of everyday life. And what I think that is, you know, poetry gives us distilled language. It gives us language that makes us pause, that makes us not only in the way that you describe going back to the words, but, you know, pause over the quality of the words themselves, but also pause over what meaning the words carry. It's a moment in the midst of the day that I think has a lot of implications for ways we might think about living our lives, that is to say, mindfully, not always racing through, considering things more than once, and understanding that we meet each other in language, right? I mean, in the poem, we encounter each other in words. That's our currency. And so it actually really does matter that those words are chosen with care if we wish to reach across boundaries and, right. and speak to each other.
Let's go to some phone calls. Jeanette from Milwaukee, hello.
Hi. I just wanted to comment that I really, really enjoyed the poem, as everyone did. And my question was this, how long did it take you to write this?
This poem was written, I got the phone call on the 17th of December, and I put my head down and you know, wrote and thought kind of nonstop for the next 3 weeks or so. I was finished about a week before the inaugural. So I worked on it quite solidly over that time period.
Did you immediately say yes, or did you say, I'll call you back tomorrow?
Oh, no, no. I said yes.
You said yes right away.
I immediately said yes. I immediately said yes, and then I yelped, and then I started working.
Yeah. I like that word, you yelped. That's a good one. 800-486-8655 is our number, and we are welcoming phone calls for Elizabeth Alexander, who delivered the inaugural poem and at the Barack Obama presidential inauguration on January 20th. And it's wonderful to be having a national and international conversation about poetry as a result of her contribution. Well, we're going to take more phone calls in just one moment. We are in a winter pledge deal going on right now, and I'm here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio, which is not very hard to do when you got Elizabeth Alexander as your guest. Your contribution makes our work here very possible, and it's easy to make your donation, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Hi, Rhonda. Thanks for booking here. This is a great hour. I'm having a wonderful time, and you're a great producer. Elizabeth Alexander, terrific thought. Thank you.
You're welcome. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Rhonda.
Our goal for this hour is $5,000, and we still have about $3,000 left to raise, but we're well on our way. Think about how much the arts mean to you, Elizabeth mm-hmm. Alexander, being able to call and speak to an inaugural poet. There aren't many out there, and here she is on Wisconsin Public Radio. So think about how much that means to you. Again, a pledge, any amount. This hour is going to enter you in that drawing to receive an autographed copy of her poem, Praise Song for the Day, published by Gray Wolf Press. Again, our goal, $5,000 this hour, so pledge online now at WPR.org or toll free at 888-202-2552.
And the pledge amount can be anything. You don't even need to pledge because it's a drawing here. But, of course, we'd like for you to pledge. We'd like to just get as many people as we can during this hour to say, I love the conversation with Elizabeth. Thanks for including poetry and for
in our lives.
Yeah,
I think everyone
right.
could use a little bit more.
Right. Absolutely. So, please, just call with your pledge, whatever amount, 888-202-2552, 888-202-2552, WPR.org is the online thing. John is sending me a note saying, and I think this is true, that Studs Terkel would be smiling to hear this right now. By golly, he would. He just would. Studs Terkel would.
And just a reminder, Kathleen, you said that you don't have to pledge to participate in this drawing. That's right. You can also send a postcard with your name, address, and telephone number to Alexander Drawing, Wisconsin Public Radio, 821 University Ave, and that's in Madison, Wisconsin, 53706.
And you could be the lucky winner of Praise Song for the Day, Elizabeth Alexander's poem, when you make a pledge of any amount this hour, or just send a card, too, if you just want to be a part of the drawing. Pledge now, 888-202-2552 or WPR.org. Thanks so much, Rhonda.
Thank you.
Elizabeth Alexander is our guest, and we go back to phone calls for her. Barbara from Ellison Bay is our next caller, Elizabeth. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I was just sitting here thinking about the pledging, and I'm a member, and I sent in my pledge by mail about 2 weeks ago, and then I'm listening to the radio every day and hearing all of these great premiums and thinking, I should have waited.
Well, just send a postcard. Just send a postcard and enter yourself in the drawing for Elizabeth Alexander.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. All right.
Okay, so I wanted to ask Elizabeth, I loved the poem, and I loved the word pictures that she drew of all the people working and so on and so forth. But and I'm kind of a poet, a little bit, very little bit. But at the very end of your poem, the last couple of lines, and I can't remember them exactly, but I wanted, at the end, I thought it wasn't, I wanted one more line.
Well,
I don't know how to describe it. I know what I wanted, and I thought, well, maybe I heard this wrong. And I was so curious afterward, and I've kept thinking about it. I wanted the last line to be praise song for the day.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what you did exactly. You did praise song for something.
Praise song for walking forward in that light is how the poem ends. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then that was it. And I just wanted that last line on. I waited a second, and I thought, oh, it's over. So maybe that's a trite way to finish a poem. But, you know, I sort of wanted it to come back to the beginning.
Well, I think that one of the nice things about all of the people I'm hearing from who are poets themselves is that it gives people, I think that your response shows an engagement with the poem that, you know, to which I say, I hope it then spawns more poems that people can make and write. And I've gotten many of them sent to me, poems in the spirit or following the structure or picking up a line and doing their own thing with the line. So I think that that's one of the things that poetry does, is it gives birth to more poetry, and we each do it our own way.
Mm. Thanks very much for the call. Do you second-guess yourself at all? You talk about releasing the poem. Once it's there, it's free. You've labored over it. So you don't think, do you? Or maybe you do. Oh, maybe I should have had another line at the end, or maybe they should have tweaked this a little bit or that, or is it out there now?
I when I'm done, I'm done, and that doesn't mean that I might not see ways that I might do things differently, but to me that means then write the next poem.
Right.
I think that at some point you can tinker forever, or you can be done and keep writing poems, and so that's how I look at it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Barbara, so much for your call. Let's go to Don from Portage next. Hello, Don.
Yeah, good morning to you both. Elizabeth, hoping you can help me here. Mm-hmm. I've been trying to wrap my mind around one of the lines in your poem.
Mm-hmm.
It says, love with no need to precede grievance. Wonder if you could help me out on that, and I'll take your comments off the air. Thank you.
Thank you, Don.
Well, I'm sorry. I was just going to say thank you for thinking about one line for so much. That's beautiful, and that's what we dream about as poets. The line is love with no need to preempt grievance. And so in thinking, trying to think in the poem about love, you know, the question is, what if the mightiest word is love? And I wanted to think about a love that was not sentimental in the way that we sort of think, you know, Valentine's Day, I love you, baby. You know, it's not that kind of love. It's about the force of love that can overcome all of the challenges and differences that, quite frankly, we face now as a nation, as citizens of the world, that are, to me, very much a part of that day and the Obama challenge. And so it's not to suggest that we meet those challenges with, as I said, a sentimental love, but with a love that can, for example, say, I don't need to agree with you in order to use that transformative power of love to hear you. And that's, I think, I don't mean to translate the line directly, but that love with no need to preempt grievance is about being able to hear difference and not thinking of love as something that is about yes, 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 and agreement.
Mm.
So that's some of the thinking behind that line. Yeah. I hope that helps.
Yeah, it does. Thanks very much for the call. We have some lines open if you'd like to speak with Elizabeth Alexander. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655 on air. Elizabeth, what about this line? I know there's something better down the road. We need to find a place where we are safe. We walk into that which we cannot yet see. Mm-hmm. Something better down the road. Tell me where that came from in your soul, and do you believe there's something better down the road? What's better down the road?
Well, in that section of the poem, I was thinking about American movement, about migration within the country and about immigration from outside of the country.
Ah.
That is, of course, you know, that is the bedrock of American experience. That you know, the Native Americans have been here longer than anybody, but after that, everybody else was an immigrant at one point or another. And thinking in particularly, let's say, of, you know, the Great Migration, when so many people, so many African Americans left the South, left the violence of the South, left lack of opportunity, and moved to the North for the hope of that opportunity, for the hope of being able to take care of their family. And that's just one example. When you think of people going west, right, you know, for the hope of being able to do better for their family, sometimes that hope is not based on, in fact, mostly that hope is not based on any kind of promise or assurance. Mm-hmm. It's hope. Right. It's hope that says that sometimes you have to uproot yourself and uproot your family and try to see if things can be better. And I think that there is, I'm tremendously moved by that, mm-hmm. Tremendously moved. We walk into that which we cannot yet see. I mean, I think about our ancestors and my ancestors, people who never saw their, you know, maybe they never saw their mother again, maybe they never saw their homeland again, maybe they never went back. But they made something new, and I think that is quintessentially American within this landmass and also as people have come in from outside of this landmass.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm glad I asked that question. There was much, much, much to that passage. Jean from Wauwatosa, hi.
Hi. Oh, this follows. My husband's from Ireland, so we can relate to that very well. His mm-hmm. whole family is there. My question for you, Ms. Alexander, is I'm very interested in hearing about your parents.
What would you like to know? They're wonderful people. They are, let's see. Well, the first thing I'll say is that it's been a personal joy that they are healthy and well elders who have been able to witness this historical moment. I was continually grateful for that throughout this whole campaign. My father was with me on the stage. He's 75, wearing his March on Washington button that he wore in 1963 when he mother took me as a baby to that march. And his whole life and the whole legacy of my family's work has been devoted to securing better opportunities for more people, to the civil rights movement, to working in government, to bring about change and equality. And you know, that sense of working collectively and working for justice and, you know, standing up and fighting when you have to is very much a part of my family's legacy.
And what were his comments and your mom's comments after your reading?
They were just proud and bursting. I mean, really just bursting. Yeah. But of course, it was everything. I mean, it was the reading and the poem, but also it was just the whole thing. I mean, they were, you know, overjoyed and citizens like so many others.
Mm-hmm. Anything else, Jean? No, I'm glad you asked the question. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Tell me a little, too, because a lot of Americans know you now, certainly, in your work, and will be going to other of your books of poetry and your essays. Tell me about your other body of work that's, you know, that you started with or that's been most recent, Elizabeth.
Well, thank you for asking about that. I have written 5 books of poems, and they are in different forms. I'm very interested in all of the different ways and shapes that poems can be made. So you'll find sonnets and also poems that follow different kinds of modes of speech. I'm really interested in the ear in the poetry writing process. I write about a lot of different kinds of things, but I'm usually quite attentive to history. I'm interested in telling often underexposed historical stories in poetry, And sometimes that can mean intimate histories, as we spoke about a little bit earlier, or it can mean history writ large. So, for example, in my last book of poems, American Sublime, I have a long epic poem that's about the Amistad incident, the slave mutiny on the Amistad ship. Mm-hmm. And I started thinking about the poem when I realized that on that ship there were no adult women. There were men, and then there were three girls and one boy child. And so what poetry was able to do for me is to think, well, who were those children and what are their voices? That's the story that history's not necessarily going to tell, and that sometimes we're never going to find documentation of what those children might have been thinking. But I think that that art is a way that we can sort of explore those kinds of gaps. And in my prose work, I'm a scholar of African-American literature, and so I write about poetry, I write about visual culture, about painting and film, and I write, again, both historically. I'm very interested in what you find in archives. Letters between writers are always really, really rich resources. Mm. I find that's exciting. And in looking at and trying to explain for readers of my prose what I see happening in those works of art.
Hmm. Let's go to Gary next from Boscobel. Hello, Gary. Hi, Gary, are you there? Hello?
Yes, I'd like to challenge your guest. I caught just a little bit of what she was saying about this enormous need to express love and use love as a healing process. And what I'm challenging on that is that it's fine to develop all this love for other human beings, but until we start learning how to develop that same kind of love for the planet Earth we live on, for the animals, the birds, and the water, and extend that love so we have this love and compassion for the life support system that keeps us all alive and healthy, love between other people is going to basically not work very well if we don't have a healthy and well-loved planet and other organisms on the planet.
Elizabeth.
Yes. Yes, I think I don't think those ideas are at all contradictory. I think it's really exciting that what we hopefully have now in this particular president is someone who, at least in his words so far, is going to be more attentive to environmental issues than we've seen in the past. And I think that when I think about love, I just want to sort of refine that point a little bit. It's that love is a way of thinking about what is our common ground and what do we say yes to? What are we willing to move towards and work on together? I think of that as a form of collective love as well. And so, once again, I don't think there is at all necessarily a contradiction between that and honoring the planet, which, you know, is, as we know, the only one we have.
It sure is. Thank you so much for your call, Gary. Elizabeth, what an honor to speak with you. I was so excited that you were giving the poem and you lived up to all of my expectations, and I love the poem and read it, and it's just been a real honor to be with you. Thank you.
Well, thank you. You've been really kind, and I've enjoyed the conversation immensely.
Great. Thanks. Elizabeth Alexander, author of all kinds of poems, actually many books of poems, but we did specifically want to talk to her about the whole inaugural experience. She is the author of Praise Song for the Day, selected by President Obama to read the inaugural poem on January 20th in Washington, D.C. Oh, that was fun. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi again, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network. We are asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we kind a wonderful thing going on this hour. What a treat to speak with Elizabeth Alexander, I think. It was a meaningful hour, and we have, which Rhonda will tell you about in just a moment, a special incentive for you to pledge. We have a goal of $5,000, and we can get there, Rhonda. We're at 2,215. So almost halfway there. And I would think once you hear about what might happen to you, you might want to pledge this hour. Hi, Rhonda.
Hi, Kathleen. Yeah, that's right. We have $5,000 to raise this hour, about 2,700 left to go. And this hour only, a pledge of any amount is going to enter you in that drawing for the signed poem, Praise Song for the Day, by Elizabeth Alexander. One lucky winner is going to be picked from whoever pledges this hour. Elizabeth Alexander is going to sign that book of poetry and send it to you. And the kicker is you don't even have to pledge to participate.
That's the kicker.
You can, that is. You can merely send a postcard with your name, address, and telephone number to Alexander Drawing, Wisconsin Public Radio, 821 University Ave, and that's in Madison, Wisconsin, and the zip there is 53706. Or you can call right now, 888-202-2552. Pledge any amount, be entered in the drawing, or simply go to your computer and log on to WPR.org and pledge that way.
So if you've never donated to Wisconsin Public Radio before, now is the time to do it. This hour, everybody who pledges, either online or by phone at 888-202-2552, will be entered in a drawing. You know, I go through a lot of the days thinking about, isn't it strange that we're alive and we eat three times a day? Do you think about things like that all day?
I eat more than three times a day, but yes.
Yeah, so do I. Oh, yeah. But the thought of, here we are on public radio. We've just talked to Elizabeth Alexander, who gave the poem at the most historic election in American history, whose mother and father were at the March on Washington in 1963. She's written the inaugural poem, and we're giving a signed copy as a pledge premium.
You know, it's a piece of history that will
land in your hands. I know, it just knocks you out. Exactly. So call 888-202-2552 or go to WPR.org. Help us reach that goal, just because everything has come together here. It's a great premium, and it says who we are and who you are and who the country is.
888-202-2552. I can't tell you how many times in a week I hear myself saying, only on public radio, only
right?
on Wisconsin
I know.
Public radio,
I know.
Only with Kathleen Dunn and the guests we have, and only with our listeners here.
Right.
So please join
right.
your friends, your neighbors, and support Wisconsin Public Radio. It takes the support of everyone who listens. Everyone to make this radio station as good as it can be. It's not just Kathleen. It's not the guests. It is all of our listeners out there. So please log on now to WPR.org or call toll-free at 888-202-2552 and make your pledge. You'll be doing your part to ensure that you'll always have the news, information, mm-hmm. entertainment that you need each day.
If you can, you may want to consider a $1,000 contribution. Some of you might be doing well enough that you can give us that, which would be marvelous. It would provide essential support for Wisconsin Public Radio, which will help us in our mission to bring valuable programming to Wisconsin. WPR, Rita says, from Franklin, delivers the best, fullest, least biased news to be found in today's media. Keep up the good work. You're truly providing a needed public service. Kay from Milwaukee, I enjoy being alerted to good new books and hearing author interviews. I love them too, Kate. I love author interviews. So call, pledge, 888-202-2552 or WPR.org.
That's right. And a pledge of any amount. I can't stress. Let's get a lot
right.
of new members.
Yes,
let's get
do
the
it.
Amateur poets out there, everyone who is concerned about the arts in our everyday life. Let's get them to call and pledge in any amount. We have 22 people who have called so far. 15 of them have been new members. So let's get those phones ringing at 888-202-2552. Your pledge in any amount is going to enter you in that drawing for Elizabeth Alexander's a signed copy of the inaugural poem.
Mm-hmm.
There's only been three other inaugural poets. You can have a copy in your hands, a piece of history that
mm-hmm.
you could cherish, you could pass down
right.
to the next generation. This hour only, 888-202-2552 or log on to WPR.org and pledge your support.
And it can be any amount. We, of course, would like to see you pledge $100 or more than that if you can. But
you
if you have nothing, just send a postcard.
Level and get that Wisconsin Public Radio membership card.
Right. That's true.
It's another option.
Well, that I like a lot of options, and that's a good option. Okay. You can do that as well.
And do you know about the Wisconsin Public Radio membership card will get you the 2-in-1 benefits at restaurants throughout the state of Wisconsin, to B&Bs. You could take your signed Elizabeth Alexander poem with you and show everyone at the restaurant or the other guests the bed and breakfasts. it'll, you know, spark conversation. You'll make new friends. But you have to call this hour and make a pledge.
You do, everybody. This is a great hour. It's a meaningful hour in which to pledge.
Right. Building relationships between listeners in Wisconsin Public Radio. 888-202-2552 is that number to call. And that website is WPR.org.
And help us reach our goal. We've got to move along a little bit. We're at $2,240. And we'd like to be at $5,000 by the time you are finished with the news. So I would ask that you call now. I would expect that many of you will. You're just waiting to the last moment here, because if you win the prize, you're right. You will pass this down generation, and you'll have great stories to tell about the day you heard Elizabeth Alexander
on Wisconsin Public Radio. And it was the same day that you called to pledge your support at 888-202-2552. And that website, one more time, is WPR.org.
Thank you, Rhonda. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour and for helping out here with pledging. To John Treader, our loyal volunteer who's been with us many years. Thanks, John. And to Lisa Nelbandian, who has been helping us out with pledge and with running the shop. Thanks to her as well. And for all of your calls and pledges, thank you very, very much, everybody. It's deeply appreciated and it's necessary. So thanks a lot.
Thank you.
I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.